Hi, this is Ed Fitzpatrick. If you enjoy local politics as much as I do, be sure to join our friends at Rhode Island PBS for the show A Lively Experiment. Hosted by Jim Hummel, the weekly series features journalists, pundits, and politicians debating the stories and issues that matter most to us Rhode Islanders. Tune in to A Lively Experiment and be part of the conversation. Fridays at 7 p.m. on Rhode Island PBS and wherever you get your podcasts. From the Boston Globe, this is Rhode Island Report. I'm Ed Fitzpatrick. Welcome back to the podcast where we bring you big conversations from our very small state. Every year, Rhode Islanders read one book across the state as part of the Reading Across Rhode Island program. This year's selection is Solito, a memoir by Javier Zamora. It tells the true story of Javier's journey from El Salvador to the United States as an unaccompanied 9-year-old. Javier's here in the studio to tell us more about the book. We're also here with Maureen Nagel, Education Chair of Reading Across Rhode Island. Javier, Maureen, thank you for joining us today on the Rhode Island Report podcast.
Great to be here.
It's an honor.
Javier, let's start with you. Your book tells the dramatic story of your trip from El Salvador to eventually crossing the border into the United States. You're only 9 years old, and I can't imagine my son's doing that at that age. What was it like for you to unearth all of those memories about that trip?
You know, it was very difficult. This is a story that I like to say that I didn't even want to tell myself for 20 years. So everything happened to me when I'm just 9 years old. And I don't start writing the book as it exists now until I'm 29 years old. So for 20 years, this was a story that was traumatic, that whenever I watch something with even like cactus in it, or any desert scenes, I would be re-traumatized. And so it has taken me a lot of therapy hours, a lot of meditation. I even became vegan for a little bit, trying to heal and get myself into a place in which I could tell this story.
Yeah, so it dredged up a lot of that emotion that you felt back then, right?
Mm-hmm. And it was difficult to put myself back in my own shoes and to relive 20 hours in the ocean by myself with only strangers around. Each of my three tries in the desert with 110 degree weather and being thirsty for hours. So all those things were extremely difficult to remember and relive. But at the end of it, it was important for me to tell myself that story and also help others tell their own stories.
Yeah, what do you hope this book does for other newcomers to the United States?
Well, you know, when I got here in 1999, a book like mine did not exist. And with my therapist, she made me realize that power is not in stories like mine existing. The power is for the book to exist on a wall, and for a child that, let's call him Javier, who just came from El Salvador, and for that child to see that book, but not necessarily read it, and choose not to.
Hmm.
So power is in the power of no. And I didn't have that choice. You know, when I was 9, this book didn't exist, and it didn't exist until 2022. By the book, I mean a story written by a Central American about immigrating to this country.
Had you looked for a book like that? Did you want a book like that to read when you were younger?
I think it would have helped.
Yeah.
Again, not to read, just knowing that it existed.
Right. And knowing that it was okay to speak out and tell that story?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I didn't. So for, I think, part of me not telling myself that story is that I didn't feel safe enough to even acknowledge that I had crossed the border the way that I did.
As you do this book tour, what are you hearing? What's the main question people ask you, especially other immigrants?
Well, everybody wants to know if I've been reunited with Carla, Patricia, and Chino, which is who I dedicate the book to.
Yeah.
And the answer is no. I don't know where they are. I don't know if they still are alive or if they're still in the United States. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the other question, or what I've seen in the book tour, is just, it hasn't happened once, not five times. I want to say 15 other child immigrants from El Salvador who were in the Sonoran Desert in 1999. There was somebody who successfully crossed June 8th, just 2 days before I crossed.
Wow.
And so for me, I always thought that I was the only one. Me and Carla were the only ones.
Yeah.
And just that close to 15 of them have shown up to my readings means that there were so many more who haven't even shown up to my readings and told me that.
Wow.
And so that, I didn't imagine those types of readers to read my book. And every single stop on the tour is a blessing.
Maureen, what struck you about Solito when you read it?
So as a reader myself, Solito took me a long time to read. Normally, I read quite fast. I tear through books. And Solito was a slow journey. It was a hard journey. But it humanized a story for me and humanized a massive political issue. And knowing that a young boy who was Javier Cito, who was the same age as one of my own daughters at the time that I read it, I saw the human there. I didn't want to give up on that story. I wanted to finish it to get to the end. I kind of knew how it would end because Javier is an author today, and he's sitting across the table from me right now. I really felt committed to that journey because of the human who was writing it.
Yeah, talk to us about why you think this book would get people excited and what conversations you hope it spurs.
So one of my favorite moments of the Reading Across Rhode Island experience is our final selection, great debate that we have when we're thinking about what book of recent publishing is going to be exciting for Rhode Islanders. For years, we've been thinking about an immigration book, and what felt like the right place, the right time right now for this story was our political climate. We're in an election year right now, and we know that this subject is one that people care deeply and passionately about. And when I think about this story in particular and the pain that I even felt as a reader journeying along with Javier Cito, the predominant emotion even through all of that was the love that I felt through the characters. And that to me was overwhelming in every way, even more so than the hardships of the journey. That was what really drove us, I think, to ultimately select this novel, is the joy, the joyful moments. You see family come together. And this is found family, right, that we find along the way. And that, I think, is something that all readers, all humans can find in our journeys, even more so than the families that we might be born and raised with.
As Maureen points out, Javier, immigration is going to be a major issue in this year's presidential race. What do you hope this book adds to the conversation?
You know, immigration seems to be the topic every presidential election as of late. What I hope that this book adds is our own perspective on our own terms. A lot of the times we get lost in statistics. I don't think that the numbers matter. Everybody knows the numbers around immigration. What this book adds, and what you were saying, is that love aspect. You know, I don't talk about how many immigrants are dying at the border. I'm not talking about, you know, why these immigrants are fleeing. All I'm talking about is human-to-human relationships and the love and the power that somebody who has the highest of empathies and what that empathy can do for a human, another human being. And I think we forget that. We forget that everybody and all of us are capable of great acts of love.
What do you think your story captures about this experience that news reports about immigrants, especially unaccompanied minors, miss?
What I like to say is that when you haven't survived the immigration machine yourself, a lot of journalists tend to focus on just the negatives. And we all know the images, you know, very difficult images to see of just immigrants suffering. What somebody who has survived it, like myself, I remember that it was the joyous parts that were also equally, if not more, necessary than the bad aspects of a journey because you need the positive, those joyous, brief moments to occur in order for you to continue and to build momentum into eventually making it. And the making it is surviving because we're talking about a life and death situation over and over again.
Maureen, do you have to worry about students who might be having a trauma response to the book? I mean, how do you prepare for that?
It starts with the relationship that a teacher has with a student. In an ideal circumstance, you know your students in the classroom. You've been able to spend time getting to know them. That doesn't always happen. We don't always know. So we worked with professionals in the school counseling field to develop lessons around, for example, surveying students about themselves and about their families and creating spaces and alternatives so that when there are moments, it's an opt-in moment if a student feels comfortable with it. And what we found is that when you share a great story written in beautiful language, that it really opens up the conversation. And really awesome things can happen in the classroom when students feel empowered to be able to share their own stories.
We'll have more with Javier and Maureen after a quick break. When you want to go beyond the headlines, let me recommend Rhode Island PBS Weekly. Rhode Island PBS Weekly is an award-winning news magazine broadcast that gives you the full story, powered by investigative journalism and narrative storytelling. New episodes of Rhode Island PBS Weekly drop Sundays at 7:30 p.m. on Rhode Island PBS. Watch past episodes at ripbs.org/weekly. That's ripbs.org/weekly. So, Javier, children and adults across the state are reading this book now. What do you hope they take away from it?
You know, I like the idea that the book is just a conversation starter. Immigration stories are stories that are shameful. Not only that, but like you mentioned, they're traumatic. So even my own parents have never shared exactly what happened and how they got here. And their son is a, you know, New York Times bestseller who wrote exactly about that.
Yeah.
And so I think for them, it is very difficult to open up. And I know that it's very difficult for not only children, but also the parents. And so now there's this vehicle called the book that they could just like point to and maybe, just maybe, it could begin some conversations.
Yeah. Can I ask how your parents have responded to the book?
My dad read it. My dad also doesn't believe in therapy. So I think he read it with his brain, not his heart. My mom believes in therapy and hasn't read past chapter one.
Wow.
And my grandpa has also not read past chapter two, which is when he leaves me. And so I think it's very difficult for them to really acknowledge and to read my perspective of the things that happened to me when they weren't there, which has also cost them, you know, I'm not a parent, but I can't imagine what they went through not knowing where their only child was for 7 weeks. That is traumatic in and of itself.
Maureen, how many of the books have been distributed for free and where do they go?
To date, we've distributed over 2,000 free copies of Solito to over 78 schools and libraries across the state. The book requests keep coming in, so we are still welcoming requests and meeting requests.
Yeah, you get requests from libraries and schools, right? How
yes.
many?
Yes, also book clubs across
book
the
clubs.
State. We have a book club in a bag program so people can go to their local libraries and get book sets and support materials, discussion questions, author resources. Local businesses sometimes will have just a book club at their business to just, you know, create community among the workspace. So there's lots of different ways that people can engage with Reading Across Rhode Island, lots of programming opportunities. Our website is robust with materials.
And it's in English and Spanish, too.
It is, yes. And I will say we have our kickoff event every January. And this year it was at the Rhode Island State House at the Rhode Island the State Library.
That's a great space, right?
So beautiful. It feels like Harry Potter-esque in a way.
so many
books and winding staircases. And I recall one person telling me that when they walked up to the table to enter the event and they were offered their free book in Spanish or English, tears came to their eyes because hadn't happened before. So it was an idea early on in our thinking, and to know that the reality of appreciation is there, we realized so much more how important it is to offer bilingual programming.
Javier, last year you wrote an LA Times op-ed noting that your memoir had hit the New York Times bestseller list, but you were ineligible to receive a Pulitzer Prize because of your citizenship status at the time. You said that after 19 years here without a green card, 4 years with EB1, Einstein visa, after earning a master's degree in writing at NYU and fellowships from Harvard and Stanford, I still wasn't enough to be equally considered among my literary peers. Is that ever going to change? And what's your message about literary prizes like this?
So luckily, somebody read that. And a lot of people read that.
Yeah.
And so the Pulitzers quickly changed the rules, but not that quickly, because they said for some reason in 2 years.
In 2 years.
So I think in 2025 will be the first year that anybody could win a Pulitzer.
So it can't apply to you. It's going to be future books.
Yeah, in the future. Irregardless of immigration status.
Yeah.
And the coolest thing is that the National Book Awards also got ahead of it, and they've also changed their criteria.
So it made a difference.
I think. Uh-huh. I can't take all the credit. There was a petition that got started that I didn't write. There was another group of writers who wrote, and there was a lot of New York Times bestsellers and writers from all over the country and the world who also signed on to a petition asking the Pulitzer to change their things. As a writer myself, I thought that the literary world was like this safe haven for everybody. And to me, it showed that even writing institutions have lacked a lot of imagination in imagining someone like myself being good enough to win an award. Mm-hmm. And now, finally, I see it as that somebody's imagination being part of the real world. So now little 9-year-old Chepitos from Colombia, from Cuba, from Ethiopia, from anywhere in the world, now they know that their stories could also win a Pulitzer, this fancy award, and that their stories are worthy.
So what's next for you as an author? Are you working on a sequel?
Not necessarily a sequel, but yes. I guess it is a sequel. It's going to be nonfiction, but I wanted to read like link short stories. And I like that you keep calling the book a novel because it's a memoir, but it is the best compliment that I could get because I wrote it in a way that people wouldn't know that it wasn't a novel. This is my aim for the next book. I'd want people to also call it short stories. Are these short stories? Is this a memoir? So I'm like messing with genre.
Interesting. Yeah, your book's nonfiction.
Yeah.
So Maureen, any idea of what the next book will be for 2025?
That's a great question. We're reading a lot of books right now to try to figure out what that is. Any suggestions?
No, but tell us about the process. Tell us about the process for picking the next book.
You bet. Well, today is all about celebration. We are so happy that Javier has come to Rhode Island. But this is just part of a robust year of programming for us. Our journey really begins at the start of the year as we start to consider all of the great books that have been published the previous year. And we have a great group of readers from across Rhode Island who are reading feverishly to find the next great rare book. It could be a memoir, it could be poetry, fiction, nonfiction, fantasy. Probably over several months, we'll narrow the list down to 4 or 5 books. And then over the summertime, we have a selection committee that reads all of those books. And then we have really, I like to call it the great debate in September, which will determine, you know, our selection. And then we'll announce it probably by next November and kick off a whole other year, next year of programming. So it's an endless cycle of joyful work that we get to eventually bring awesome authors to Rhode Island to celebrate literature, to celebrate stories, to get conversations going. That's what Rary's all about. And we're thankful for any spotlighting of this work to help keep that going. So thank you so much.
And thank you so much for selecting the book and for having me here.
Javier, thank you for sharing your story. And Maureen, thank you for coming in and talking about the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Rhode Island Report is a production of the Boston Globe in collaboration with Rhode Island PBS, which is a supporter and educational partner of the Reading Across Rhode Island Project. Today's episode was produced by Megan Hall, audio mixing and mastering by Marissa Ewing of Hemlock Creek Productions. Our music is from APM. Be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Ed Fitzpatrick. See you next week. Looking to binge watch all your favorite PBS shows? You need Rhode Island PBS Passport, Masterpiece, Antiques Roadshow, Rhode Island PBS Weekly, and many more. Watch them all, anytime, and from any streaming device. Learn more about this member benefit at ripbs.org/passport. That's ripbs.org/passport.